The Vietnam War, it's over. Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
You're listening to Finale, episode number 3, The Wonder Years.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, how do you
find?
All I need is my brother.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Finale, the podcast that revisits the series finale of a beloved TV show that at least one of us has watched. I'm Ron Richards, and I'm here with Carrie Angolia.
Hello.
And this time around, we're breaking format a little. When we started doing the show, we wanted to talk about doing just kind of like more contemporary shows, like in the 2000s. But thanks to a recent Beatles resurgence and listening to the song A Little Help from My Friends, we ended up talking about The Wonder Years. And then I believe I said, oh, that Wonder Years finale.
And I said, what Wonder Years finale?
And then I said, oh, we got to do that. So here we are. We're talking about The Wonder Years, which was a show that was on ABC. It premiered on January 31st in 1988, and it ran for 6 seasons. And it ended, the series finale was a 2-part, hour-long episode, two half-hour episodes broken, extended into 1 hour. That aired on May 12th, 1993. It was a Wednesday night at 8 p.m. It came in number one in its time slot for the series finale. It's the culmination
of a lot of teenage angst.
A lot of teenage angst. For those who might not be familiar with The Wonder Years, this was a kind of a retro TV show that followed our main character, Kevin Arnold, as he grew up from the years, 1968 to 1973. That's the years that it took, Vietnam,
right.
All that
so
sort of stuff.
20 yeah. years later, so it's yeah. as if today it was a show about
1997, right? Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. So, and at the time, it had a great soundtrack, a lot of 60s music. It had a lot of the kind of retro feel for it and all that sort of stuff. I remember watching the show from the first episode.
Yes.
And I watched every episode all 6 years. I remember this finale. I remember everything about it. I love the show. This is one of my favorite shows, despite me getting teased mercilessly through middle school for bearing a slight resemblance to Fred Savage.
I was wondering when we were going to bring that up, because there is the one scene that I was watching, and I was like, that's weird, because it was a little jarring for me.
It was a little too close to home?
A little too close to home.
Yeah. Well, what's even more a little too close for home is that the series creator, while the TV show was filmed in Los Angeles, and in it you see their palm trees and things like
yeah.
that, they never actually say where they are in the country. The idea is that it's in a small suburban town or whatever. The creator of the show modeled it after and wanted it to be set in his hometown of Huntington on Long Island.
Which I think I had as an impression in my brain. And then so just background on me, I either never saw this finale or saw it but don't remember because I don't care about things and I'm a horrible person. But there was a point where the view pulled back to their block, this idyllic suburban block. And I was like, yeah, that's totally Long Island. And then I saw the palm trees and thought, this whole thing happened in California.
Well,
I hadn't remembered that at all about the show.
That's been a long, it's a sticking point, it would be, because the creator is from Long Island, and for you listeners who might not know, we are from Long Island. In fact, literally the town of Huntington on Long Island. We grew up in the town next to it, but in the municipal of Huntington. And the fact, budget reasons and all this, TV happens in California and that sort of stuff. But I remember when the show started, Kevin wore a New York Jets jacket. So there was a lot of thinly veiled Long Island references, even though it took place in California. So I kind of looked like Kevin Arnold when I was in middle school. This show started when I was in fifth or sixth grade.
Right, and it ends in...
The end of high school.
The end of high school, and that was... We were in high school.
At the time,
summer of 93 was the summer before my senior year of high school, summer before your junior year.
Yeah. So we were primed for
the age group for this. Yeah, so we were probably just as awkward, if not more awkward, than these teenagers.
Yep. And so so for this finale episode, quick kind of summary of what happens in it. It's the beginning of summer 1973. Kevin, our main character, is not doing well. His girlfriend is going off to work a summer job at a resort, presumably in the Catskills. Or whatever, or the Catskills are in California, or like, Napa.
I don't know.
And his friends are going off on a road trip, and his other friend is doing summer school.
To New York.
Right. Well,
to be fair.
Well, no, the friends' road trip was they're going to New York, New Orleans, and then San Francisco, which is not a very well planned road trip, no matter where you're leaving from.
They're teenagers.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the whole point, is that these people are idiots.
With a young Giovanni Ribisi.
And I even wrote in my notes. Hi, Giovanni Ribisi. Hi, other guy.
And good chance they died on that road trip.
Oh, yeah. They had, like, one sleeping bag.
A beater of a car. But so Kevin is stuck at home working for his dad at the furniture factory and just mad at life.
Also, I was like, Kevin's dad made furniture?
Well, that happened on the show. So
I'm sure it did.
His dad originally worked at Norcom. Which was like
Grumman.
On Long Island, right? And then he quit and bought a furniture factory because that was his dream. That was a plot point in like season 4.
Yeah, which so, either, yeah. again, I either didn't watch or watched and didn't remember because I am not a good person.
And in the Wonder Years defense, having the dad work for a company called Norcom is a great name of a military industrial company. And actually, friends of mine in college had a band called Norcom Defense Industries.
I actually think that if they made a Norcom T-shirt,
yes,
that you would own it.
Oh yeah, that's definitely a good one. Anyway, so Kevin is stuck working in this furniture factory for the summer, mad at life, and so a lot of talk about they're all finding themselves, like a very 70s,
it's very
like 70s. We got to find ourselves and that sort of thing. And you get some sense of some tension between him and Winnie, his girlfriend.
Do you remember that being a point earlier in the season? Because it sounds like he broke up with her.
Yeah, it sounds like he did the whole, we need space, we need to find each other.
And she was like, cool, I got a job out of town. And he was like, oh, hey, about that space thing,
I didn't mean that.
I meant like, space, you know, apart together, though.
So he quits his job, he has a falling out with his dad, he packs a bag and goes up to surprise her at her resort job.
Always a good idea.
Not a good idea. And that, needless to say, that goes poorly. He sees her kissing another lifeguard, and so then he storms off in a huff. She gets fired from the job. They end up meeting up on the road together. They have a very emotional evening, and then the series ends with them returning back hometown for the 4th of July parade, and he sees their family, and then it goes into a true series finale.
Yes.
Where the whole show had the device of an older Kevin narrating. So you got a sense of what he was thinking, whatever. And so in the true series finale, he goes from character to character and explains what happened to them. And then, you know, it kind of ends with a nice little monologue about childhood and growing up and, you know, and looking back on
and promises life. Of innocence and truth and heartbreak and friendship and...
So this finale kills me every time I see it.
Like, yeah, that does not surprise me. This is like tailor-made to be a tearjerker for Ron.
This is like pushing every sentimental button.
Every button there is. There's like a sibling thing. There's like a dad thing. There's a mom thing. There's a like the girl next door thing. Like every single thing.
Yeah, it gets me every time.
It's almost like I could imagine sitting next to you watching this. Someone is pulling your teeth out just like one at a time. You're like, no. And then this?
Well, I'm not in pain, but it definitely like, it's this series finale actually like talking about, I tear up talking about it. And like the moment...
That's pain. That counts as pain.
The moment at the end of this episode when like they go back and he sees the dad, like that's when it starts.
Yeah.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves. So let's talk about Kevin and Winnie.
Okay. So as I'm watching this episode, I am realizing the more we do this show...
Yeah.
the more you may realize that you shouldn't like me as much as you do. Because most of it, I was... It's so awkward. And it's so painful. Yeah. And
you don't like cringe. Like, that is not... Yeah.
It's not, like, an emotion that I enjoy. Right. And being a teenager was really embarrassing enough. To watch other people be teenagers is horrifying.
But the thing about this, though, I mean, despite it being kind of, you know, hammed up for TV and that sort of thing, this was a very realistic...
Oh, yeah.
Like, teenage, like the dumb 17-year-old kid, I'm going to go surprise my girlfriend. And, like, that is not a good idea.
No. And, yeah. I mean, I think that's why it was so cringeworthy. Not because the acting was so horrible.
Which was not great. Yeah.
Well, but it was fine.
25 years old.
It conveyed an emotion.
Yeah.
You know, enough of an emotion that I was, I mean, I had my eyes covered. I was like, please don't. Oh, yeah. God. Like, I know what's coming and it's not going to be good. So their relationship to me, they had zero chemistry. Aww. I didn't buy them together at all. Yeah. And I didn't know. But that seems really teenagery. Like, it seems appropriate, yeah. Right? Like, there were plenty of relationships at that period in our lives where you think it's the end of the world if it doesn't go on. And then looking back on it, you're like, yeah, no, they had nothing in common. Like, right. they should not have actually been together, except they had their whole entire lives in common.
All they had in common was the fact that they grew up next door to each other. And he even says it in the monologue bit or the narration bit, is that up to that point in my life, every good thing that had happened to me involved her in some way.
Right. So, I mean, that was poignant, and I how far into this are we going? The moment where they're in the barn.
Yeah.
Can we talk about
the
barn?
Sure, yeah. The pivotal barn scene.
But you guys remember the barn scene. First of all, the lighting in that scene was magical.
Yep.
Not just because it's 100% incredulous and made in a reality that doesn't exist, but it was really beautiful.
Yeah.
And it is how I would imagine one would remember that as an adult. So you mentioned that the narrator is there and he's telling this whole story as if he's, you know, it's How I Met Your Mother or how American Beauty. I don't know. the grand tradition of narration. But, you know, he's telling that, and to me that felt like, yes, that's how you would remember it. You would remember Winnie in half light, half shadow.
Yep.
They got caught in the rain. She's wrapped in a blanket. It's, you know, she's crying, and it's the raindrops and the tears and the wet hair and the blanket. It was really, really well done and totally not, you know, clearly it wasn't reality. It was more of a romanticized memory. And the fight is stupid. And they're stupid teenagers, but she says at one point, I don't want it to end.
Yeah.
And that to me is very real, right? You're in a situation that you know isn't going to last. You know, it can't. You're 17.
Like you're at the end of a chapter and the beginning of a new chapter.
So there's a little bit of them just mourning growing up.
Yeah.
In a way, they had that moment where they acknowledged that they were growing up.
Right. And very Essie Hinton.
Okay.
Yeah. Very outsiders. I mean, minus the violence.
Sure.
And the social class warfare. But
I mean, stay gold. Stay gold, Kevin Arnold. So I really liked that part of it. And I thought the narration was needed to be heavy at the end because you needed to tell the story of everyone. But I thought it was well done.
Yeah.
I thought it was well done. But I, as an adult watching it, was like, yeah, no, of course they don't. They can't be together. Like, they're not. First of all, he's a jerk. I mean, my entire notes for this episode are, oh, Wayne's a jerk. And then like 5 minutes later, oh God, Kevin is a jerk. And then I was like, oh, Kevin's just like his dad.
Oh.
And then like, oh, his dad's a good guy. That's like pretty much the whole story arc for me there is that really Kevin needs to grow up.
Yeah, Kevin wasn't the best character, despite having a light likeness bearing closely to him. I can say that he was not the best character, did not make the best decisions. But that's part of what made the charm of the show. And like the major story arc of the show was, of course, Kevin growing up, but it was him and Winnie. I mean, the show started.
Totally, yeah.
I mean, it was so fun. Like in college, me and one of my best friends, every time we saw a girl that we thought was cute, we'd do the da 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 da, like the Winnie theme music, right? You know, like it was just like I remember from that first episode of The Wonder Years when you saw Winnie for the first time and the little acoustic guitar riff plays. And
Is that his adorableness really tempered the fact that he was an idiot, right? Yeah. And when you're a kid, I mean, it started when he's like what, 12 or something, and then. Watching a 12-year-old make mistakes is adorable. Watching a 17-year-old...
is cringy.
Is, I mean, like, really painful. I know we're jumping around a little bit. I'm going to need to talk about the card game at some point.
Oh, okay. let's do that then. While just to recap for anyone who hasn't seen it, while he's at the resort, he gets a job as a busboy, and Winnie is off with the other lifeguards, and so he's feeling lonely. So he goes to play poker with the merengue band.
So he plays poker with the merengue band. The first game, all his busboy friends are like, "Don't play poker with the band," and he goes in. He's like, "I got this," and he bluffs them, and he does very well, and he skips off into the evening.
Feeling good, like finally gets a win.
Yeah, he
needed
a win.
Like that's the thing, he got in a fight with his dad, he loses his job, you know, his friends have left him, he's all very rudderless, he did it.
Right, yeah. And like most idiots, he does not know when to quit.
Right. Well, so what happened? I mean, he's so excited that he did something he goes off to find his girlfriend to tell her.
Oh, that.
And he sees her kissing the other guy, and so he's back feeling down, and then the next day it gets even worse, and so he's like, "All right, I'm gonna leave, but before I leave, I'm gonna get another win under my belt," and he goes back to the poker game.
Never go back.
Never go back.
Don't go back.
Yep.
Don't go back. So I don't know if, like, in the universe of The Wonder Years, if they had played him the night before so that.
Oh, I had that same thought, maybe, yeah.
Because he wasn't that good a player,
right,
but he won. And then this night, I mean, it was so atrocious.
Yeah.
And it was, like, so just hand after hand after hand painful. The fact that he put his car keys in the pot.
Yeah.
And then they took the car.
That's what happens.
That's what happens. And then that kept on coming up for me for the rest of the episode. So that happens, I don't know, a half of the way through this entire experience. Every 5 seconds, I'm like, are you going to tell your dad about the car? So he and his dad, and we can get more into the dad stuff, but he and his dad have a series of bad son dad moments.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. So like, so the main story arc is Kevin's growing up. Or Kevin's, you know, kind of, you know, the story of him growing up through his teen years, and that is told through as I see the Wonder Years, the A plot of him and Winnie Cooper, but then it's the B plot of him and his dad.
Because it's him becoming a man.
Right. And I will put this out there that in the history of television, I do not think there is a better TV dad than Dan Lauria as Kevin Arnold's dad, who I don't even know his name in the show, to be honest. His father's first name.
No, Kevin Arnold's dad.
Kevin Arnold's dad, yeah.
Dan Lauria, who I saw...
Jack Arnold.
...out to eat in a Chinese food restaurant in Midtown in New York.
Oh, great.
And I said, "Oh my God, it's Kevin's dad."
Right. For literally years, the dad sitting at the kitchen table trying to read the paper, breathing through his nose maneuver was too real, to be honest. As someone who has a father, as someone who has a father who is from New York and Long Island and breathes through his nose, and you don't want to get that look, like he gave the annoyed, you know. And even in this episode with the scenes of Kevin working for his dad and him like lording over him and kind of, you know, nagging him or whatever, like, and then the argument and like everything, all the interactions with the dad have always been painfully realistic.
So let me ask you this question.
Yes.
As an adult watching it again, did you still feel like the dad was kind of like hounding him and giving him a hard time at work?
No, well, no. I think
okay, because yeah. The way you said it, I was like, "Are you still taking Kevin's side?"
No. It was a no. As an adult, but I get where Kevin's coming from because I've been in that place too. But the dad is just being the dad. I mean, that's the problem is that like at that age,
just being a normal person.
Right. But at that age, you're never gonna get along with your dad.
Right, because you're growing into your own person, and you're trying to. I mean, that's the whole point of being a teenager is you at some point are breaking free. You're going to go live on your own. You're going to go do your own thing. And, you know, I think the tension with the dad was really well done. I can't believe he doesn't tell. So there's tension with his dad. They get into a series of fights. The dad comes up to
the Catskills
camp.
Yeah.
And like drops off stuff from mom, which is very sweet. And Kevin's a jerk about it.
Yeah.
And then when they see each other again at 4th of July, there's this like, oh, we're going to be cool about it.
Yep.
Dad says, hey, son, how you doing? And he says, great. And I'm like, are you going to tell him about the car? Like, I'm doing great. I hitchhiked home because I lost my car in a card game.
But that doesn't work
man.
In the narrative, though. And also, that's also very true, too, in that, like, the silence, it's the stuff that's unsaid. And
which
then
is
even,
everything.
And then
which
even with the last shot of the show with people in it is Kevin and the dad
together.
Sitting in the kitchen having a Coke, and he said the dad's having coffee at the end of the day and just kind of reflecting on it, and, like, now everything's back and nice. And I got to tell you, and the stuff about liking the dad, even though as intimidating and scary and breathing through his nose as he was, when Kevin and Winnie come back and they're at the parade and they see everybody and the narrator kicks in and they're going through what happened to everybody. And when he says that his brother Wayne took over the factory 2 years later after dad passed away, that I'm getting choked up now just saying it. Like, that gets me every time.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that God. Was like well, a glimpse into the future that no one was prepared for.
You're not prepared for it, not expect, which you probably weren't prepared for when he passed.
Especially
like,
when
yeah.
you're a kid, you know, everyone is immortal all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Even when, you know, you're yelling at them.
In terms of tear-jerking finale tools, they pulled that lever really well.
Like,
you don't see that coming and it hurts and it's, so. And yeah, and then we find out that him and Winnie do not end up together, that she goes to Paris to study art history, and he picks her up from the airport when she comes back from Europe with his wife and kid.
Yeah.
So they still maintain a relationship.
Apparently,
but not romantic.
He got another car at some point.
Because he picked her up from the airport.
He picked her up from the airport.
Yeah. But so going back to the barn, they did it, right?
I guess.
I mean, it's my vibe is that was their special night in the barn together, and they, you know.
They had not done it before.
They had not done it up to that point.
That kissing scene was really long.
It was a very long kissing scene, and not very good.
No, and I, as a rule, don't tend to watch teenagers kissing each other because it feels weird and awkward. And then it was just a really long, it was long.
Yeah.
It wasn't like. I'll tell you this. It's not like kids today when they make shows for teenagers when they're cast with like 30-year-olds. And then when they're doing it, you're like, it's 30-year-olds doing it.
Right.
Whatever. But when you're watching like really young people kissing for that long, it actually was really uncomfortable.
Well, that was kind of one of my takeaways too, is that like, so the opening of the show that at least we saw, oh, that's a whole other tragedy, by the way, is that the opening credits of the show were originally the Joe Cocker version of A Little Help from My Friends, the Beatles song.
Which is what drew us to watch this episode to begin with.
And as, you know, like many shows in the 80s and 90s that they did not anticipate having a life on DVD or streaming. They did not negotiate the music rights for those. And so I was very saddened to see on Netflix, where Wonder Years can be watched on right now, is that the opening song has been replaced by another random cover of A Little Help from My Friends. Yeah. It is not the Joe Cocker version, which is just
but
a heartbreak.
But it is a cover of the Joe Cocker version.
Which is weird, because it's like
it's
a cover of the cover of the Beatles.
Of the Beatles. Yeah.
But in watching the opening credits during this episode, they look like babies when the show started.
Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting to do actual age-appropriate casting on a show.
Yeah.
Because now watching this in the finale 6 years later, you see them grow up. You know, like you see him.
Right.
Kevin is close to becoming a man.
It's
Winnie
not
is a
like
woman.
Donna Martin graduates. She was already.
Well, Andrea was 35. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I think that's part of why I watched this whole episode through my hands covering my eyes, because they weren't grown-ups pretending to be awkward teenagers. Like, right. They were teenagers, and...
It was very accurate.
And the kind of, like, melange of emotions, it's like, I'm jealous, but I'm not going to say I'm jealous. I love you, but I'm going to say I'm mad.
Yep.
You know, all of that was palpable in a way that I didn't enjoy at all.
Okay, so to wrap it up, so looking back on the series finale, so you didn't enjoy it, you did not like
it.
No,
I did. I'm glad we watched it.
Okay.
It reminded me that the ending was very good.
Yep.
And
it's a strong finale.
It's a strong finale.
Good way to go out.
There were no cop-outs.
No, yep, none. Yep. Gave us just enough of what happens to them.
Yeah, like, they're like, Paul turned out to be a lawyer who's allergic to stuff.
Well, that was his
That's
thing.
That's the wrap-up for that guy.
I know, Paul.
Probably, like, the most brilliant lawyer, the smartest person on the show by far.
And he sneezes.
They're like, catchphrase, sneeze guy. There's the sneeze guy. It's funny because he has a big nose and he sneezes. Poor Paul.
But aside from Paul, very satisfying to know where everybody ends. We see Olivia Dabo comes back, the sister. She's pregnant.
Oh, like, do before we wrap up.
Yeah.
Kevin says, she had her son
in September.
I think he looks like me.
Well, family resemblance. That sort of thing. I know that's weird. That's weird. It was a little weird. But yeah.
I mean, I don't suspect anything.
And so but also he says, you know, his sister had the baby and the Wayne and the dad passed away. Mom was great.
Mom's great.
Here's a little confession. The mom has always reminded me of your mom.
Oh.
Just in ways of, like, she's very nice.
She is very nice.
Yeah, I mean, like, it just little kind of, you know,
the
like.
The mom has maybe, like, the best line of the episode.
You don't need to leave home to find yourself.
People don't realize it, but there are a lot of places you can find yourself, which is really a lame statement. Like, you don't realize it. But the way she said it, she was talking about, like, you could walk into a restaurant and be totally lost, and then you realize you found yourself. That, to me, like, if you're in the middle of the 70s or the early 70s and your kid is about to, like, drive away from home, it's clear that she had that moment.
Yeah.
It's clear that she walked into a restaurant one day totally lost.
Yeah.
And we don't ever know what that story is.
But you know that experience
happened to her, and she's trying to convey that wisdom. And I think that, like, that is, like, what my mom is like.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, like, right. Like,
mom is, like, really smart, compassionate, doesn't talk about shit that happened to her.
Right.
Right? Like, but you know there's stuff going on in there. And that was something about, like, stereotypical moms and dads, right? Like, they were the face of law and order, of the rules, of compassion, of all of those things. But you didn't, when you're a teenager, you didn't know them as people.
Yeah.
So I think the parents on this whole show did a great job of being that, right?
Yeah.
Like, clearly there's stuff going on in their world, but it's not about that for the kids.
Right. And there's so much stuff, like, in the beginning of the episode when Kevin's friends are going to go on the road trip and Kevin's going to go with them, and he's telling his parents he's going to go with them, and his dad's like, no, you're not. And he's like, that's it, you're not, you know? And like, I've had that argument.
Yeah, like, except, you know, and like Kevin, you always go.
Yeah, but they didn't pick me up from the airport when I came home, so, like,
I did.
I know. But anyway, yeah, so, all right, so all in all, the Wonder Years, what do you give, thumbs up?
Yeah, thumbs up.
Okay.
I mean, if I would have enjoyed it if there was a little bit less underage teenager kissing.
Yeah.
But other than that, I thought it was very good.
Yeah, I think that they nailed the emotional beats. It's a good wrap-up to a series. They give all the characters their moment, maybe minus Paul. But
poor Paul.
Yeah, so. All right, well, let's go wrap it up for The Wonder Years, one of my personal favorite series finales. I'm so glad that I got you to watch it because I love it. It just makes me, I want to cry even just talking about it.
Softy.
All right, so you can follow us on Twitter at Finale Podcast and we're on Facebook at Finale Podcast. And you can find all of our episodes at finalepodcast.com.
And if the mom reminds you of my mom, let us know.
Okay. I'm going to keep on trying. Getting high, I'm gonna make a tide, oh no. Gonna get by with my friend. Oh, I'm gonna get on by.
Yes, I'm gonna get on back. I'm gonna take them all along. I'm gonna take them all along.